Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I loved my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo.
Welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Dotter 5, and this is WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is November the 28th. It's the week after Thanksgiving, and it's 7 o'clock p.m., and if you're not listening at that date and time, then you're probably listening to a rebroadcast or a podcast. But if you are listening live, then you might want to jot down this phone number. It's 865-333-5937, because this is a call-in atheist talk radio show. I'm Dotter 5, and as usual, we have a guest with us today. A guest is Eric. Say hi, Eric.
Hi.
And we'll be talking about, what would you call your topic you brought?
Why prayers are pointless.
And are they pointless? And that's a good topic for our audience. If you want to call in and talk about how prayers are pointless, we'd be more than happy to take your calls. The line is open, 333-5937. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, and rationalist groups that exist here in Knoxville. And we'll be telling you about how you can connect with them right after the mid-show break. Also, did you know that there's an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville? And has been for over 8 years? Did you know that, Eric?
Yes, I do. I've actually been on the show once.
You've co-hosted the show. That's right. And you can actually turn over to Comcast Channel 12 right now and see it. That's Comcast Channel 12, and the show's name is Free Thought Forum Knoxville. It's on Community Access TV. But we're hoping you'll DVD it and stick listening to the radio show. And in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs out there, and you'll be hearing some of them right here in this program and generally on this station as they are in rotation. Let's kick off this topic, how prayer is useless, if it is useless. What have you got?
Pointless, Jerry.
Pointless. Useless, pointless, worthless. Anyway,
ineffective.
What do you got?
Ineffective.
What's your argument?
Well, last night at the meetup, the atheist meetup last night.
It's every Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Just every Tuesday at Barley's.
Uh-huh.
In the Old City. Somebody brought up the fact that they had lost a loved one, and people kept saying, "Well, I'll pray for you, which is all fine and well if they're share the same religion as you do, but, you know, the reason why it struck me is that, and again, if somebody said that to me as an atheist, I would probably say, you know, thanks, but no thanks. I don't know if I'd get offended because that's kind of...
Some do.
It's kind of a... For a lot of people, it's kind of a reaction.
Okay? A lot of it depends on if they know you're an atheist.
Right.
If they know you're an atheist and they say, I'll pray for you, then it's offensive because they're basically saying that they believe that you're broke and they want to fix you, and they're going to ask their invisible friend to do it for them.
Well, yeah. But, and again, I've... you know, experiencing the pain of a loss. And again, people handle it differently, but yes, they do. They think that if you're an atheist and you lose a loved one, that somehow this, you know, like you were saying, well, I call him the invisible wizard in the sky, is going to help you get through that. And for me, really, I would want to say, I would want someone to say that, you know, I'm thinking about you, not just thinking about you, but if there's anything you need, you know,
what can I do for you?
What can I do for you? Uh-huh. Because prayer is not going to do a thing for me. And it's not going to do, I mean, you know, emotionally or physically, that prayer isn't going to do anything for me.
Yeah, I have a quote here that I wanted to bring up at this point. Prayer is kind of like masturbation. It feels good for the person doing it, but does nothing for the person you're thinking about.
Okay. Well, and again, what I like to do is call, you know, people that just don't have a religious belief, none. I don't know who, I didn't come up with that, with the word or term. Somebody else did, but I certainly think it's appropriate. Because calling yourself an atheist is like saying I don't, you know, it's like saying I don't believe in, you know, the boogeyman. I'm an atheist as far as the boogeyman goes, or an atheist as far as leprechauns go, or any, I mean, it's just, you know, endless things that, but for nuns, not N-U-N, but N-O-N-E-S.
Mm-hmm. Like on a forum, all the religions would be above you, and you'd say none of the above.
Right. But the reason I think they object to people saying, I will pray for you, is not only is that it's a pointless gesture, but it also completely dismisses my beliefs.
Right.
Okay, or what I don't believe. Mm-hmm. And again, on the other hand, I've never told anyone, nor do I ever encourage anyone to tell someone else that is suffering from a loss and turns to their faith that there is no soul and their dearly departed is now food for worms. No. I don't do that, and I don't encourage people to do that, except that that's what I wholeheartedly believe. People who do not believe in an afterlife or gods, you know, do not want to hear. Just at the same token, you don't want me to say, well, you know, I'm sorry, your friend's dead, okay, and they're gone forever, and you'll never see him again, and all you have is their memories. But at the same time, people do not want to hear that their dearly departed essence, if you will, or a soul, has traveled to a magical paradise or place of eternal torture if they don't make the cut. You know, as opposed to, you know, heaven, you've got hell. And, you know, and that they are speaking to an invisible wizard on their behalf. People, you know, especially right after you lose a loved one, that's one of the hardest things you have to go through in life. And that's not going to be comforting to anybody who doesn't believe doesn't believe in a deity, mm-hmm. but doesn't believe in your deity.
Yeah.
You know, after losing a loved one, everyone deserves to be comforted, or at least, at the very least, not have some ridiculous myth pushed upon them, and that is exactly what that does for non-believers.
Yeah.
People who, you know, need to not be so arrogant to think that their faith and beliefs can and will comfort everybody.
Right. It's kind of like when you talk about prayer in school, the believer says we need to have prayer in school. And I've got a quote from Hitchin. Why don't they call for prayer on the trains or prayer in stock exchanges? They want it in school. Why do you think they want it in school? Because they want a captive, young, receptive audience. They want an audience that they can mold and form. Well, they're not going to have it. They're not going to be allowed to have it. But not only that, they would not allow other religions to do the same thing. They want the privilege. They don't want other religions to do it. And they just don't really care about whether the other religions have a right to do it or not. They want it, and that's all they want.
I agree. Yes, and we're not talking about, about Muslim prayers or Jewish prayers. It's always about Christian prayers.
Right.
We want the kids to pray.
Protestant, because Catholics have their own schools.
Right. Yes, I grew up in the Catholic school system, and yes, we did pray and we went to church and it was all part of that. Mm-hmm. But again, that's a private school; it's not the public, mm-hmm. and prayer in public school has no place in it. Because you have to be inclusive of everybody.
Sectarian's prayer.
Right.
And that's the problem. You know, you can't have the government. A school is a government institution.
Right.
You cannot have the government institution approving one religion over another or vouchsafing one religion over another. They should not be put in that position. And that's one of the problems that we have about taxation of churches. Because now the government has to be in a position of saying, this is a valid church, that is not a valid church. And we don't want to have the government coming down on one side of a religion or a religious question versus another side.
Right.
But we are there. I mean, this is part of it.
Right.
But anyway, getting back to how it's useless or pointless.
Well, just for example, I mean, you know, the examples. Hello.
Okay, hello. We have Ty Wombat calling in. We're going to tie him into the stream here in just a second.
You're going to tie in Ty?
Yeah. Wombat, are you there? Can you hear us?
I'm here. What's up?
Oh,
can you hear me?
Good. Yeah, we can hear you. And we've got
what's up?
We've got a subject going. We're talking about is prayer useless? What did you call it? Not useless.
Pointless.
Pointless. Is prayer pointless? What do you think, Wombat?
Is prayer pointless? There's definitely, and if just to be absolutely blunt, I don't think there's any supernatural beneficial aspect to prayer. But it has been shown that, you know, if you think people are praying for you, for some people that's beneficial to them. For other people, it's absolutely not. It actually puts more pressure on them. So, like, there's still that 50-50 dice roll of, hey, people are thinking about me. Now I'm going to feel better. That helps my endorphins kick in, and I feel a lot more at peace. Or I might breathe more slowly and be more relaxed and might get out of a really tough situation where I'm stressed out. But it could also have an opposite effect. So I wouldn't say it's entirely useful. There's definitely people out there that definitely got a benefit,
some
but I don't think there's any supernatural play to it.
Might find it stressful to think that they've got to now show that they're getting better, whether they're feeling better or not.
Right. You know, there was a test that was done on this. I don't know if you guys already talked about it. Let's see. Virginia Tech did a test where they did an open study on seeing who could benefit from prayer, and they told, like, a group of 30 people, we're going to pray for you. Another group of 30 people, hey, we're not going to pray for you. We're just going to do assessments on you health-wise. And it turned out that it was, like, And it turned out, like, it was a 50-50 with regard to the people who were feeling prayed for, because they actually felt more burdened by having to feel healthy because they knew people were praying for them.
Yeah.
Whereas the people who weren't being prayed for, some got healthy, some got sick. So it didn't seem to have much of an effect.
Right. Well, this is Eric's topic, and I want to give him the go to go ahead and move on with his topic. So you have the next segment that you want to go for.
Well, there's, you know, many areas that you could talk to of why prayer does not necessarily, I guess, pointless, but why prayer doesn't work. And
But it does work. It works about the same as random chance.
Well, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I was gonna, you know, I worked on this this afternoon a little bit, and I was gonna talk about 9/11, but it, you know, I think 9/11 is kind of, I don't know, maybe it shouldn't be. I think 9/11 is kind of
soon.
Well, it's not too soon, but you know, it's been talked about and over again. So I didn't really want to get into that. Not, I mean, I don't even have time to.
Well, we've got a whole hour.
I did want to talk about thoughts and prayers for gun victims. You know, and again, that's something that, you know, we've had terrorist attacks in the United States. A few of them, not to even remotely the scale as on 9/11, but these gun violence keeps on happening every single time. And this has become national now. People are speaking out and they're saying, I'm tired of your thoughts and prayers. I want action. Okay. And that's what giving people their thoughts and prayers, it's hardly enough.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we've got to take some action, you know, and that's just the thing that, you know, people say, you know, why, and one of the things that to get offended by, say, people say, I'll pray for you. Well, it's like, Thanks, I appreciate that. But that you're not really doing anything.
Right.
Okay, all you're doing is you're offering me your thoughts.
Your thoughts.
Okay, mm-hmm. Why don't you actually offer to help me instead of just, you know, praying to
or change the country, change the legislation.
Well, that's going to be very hard to do, especially in this country.
I mean, if you take polls after polls in America are showing that people are ready for a change in gun registration laws and gun ownership laws. But it's like the entire country is being held hostage by one particular lobby, the NRA. You know, they pay politicians to write laws and support laws that support them and their gun lobby. And it doesn't seem to matter what the people of America want. They're not being represented. They're not being represented in this area. And their prayers certainly aren't changing things.
Right. But, you know, and again, the list goes on and on what you could talk about. And I don't really want to get into, you know, a gun debate.
Uh-huh.
You know, this, and also there's I think it was back in 2013 in Philadelphia. I mean, this is not an isolated incident, but the Scheibels, I don't know if you're familiar with that, Larry, but in 2013 in Philadelphia, the parents refused to seek medical treatment for their two daughters, and I guess after the second child died, they charged them.
What were they? What was their problem, illness wise?
I don't know. I was cramming this in, but this was a.
It was an illness. It was gunshots or something.
Right. Correct. Okay. It wasn't. I don't believe it was an illness, but it's the Scheibels. And, you know, that's instances like that, that can cause, and granted, the majority of people, of Christians, I would think go to seek medical attention when they need medical attention. But, you know, saying, you know, putting such an emphasis on prayer, you know, might give the idea that, you know, people the idea that they don't have to. Or again, calling, you know, sending in a donation. To religious organizations like the 700 Club or really any person, you know, saying that I can heal you, you know, just through praying for you. That's, you know, people do that. I mean, people are duped into thinking
that these
TV preachers and radio preachers that they can actually save them. And they, you know, money that they could use towards medical treatment, they spend on these charlatans.
Yeah, I remember growing up that there were TV evangelists who would tell the people at home to put their hands on the TV and they would heal you through the TV set.
Right.
I remember that.
Yeah, it's just awful. There was one, I think it was Peter Popov, who had a big tent type of revival thing, and he said he was going to heal everybody in the audience and that they should take their pills, if they have them with them, and throw them up on the stage because they were going to leave here healed.
Yeah.
And you can imagine, you know, the next day the people were really hurting and he was in some other town telling them the same thing.
Right.
I mean, why are people like that allowed to do that in this day and time?
First Amendment.
And it's stuff like that.
Yeah,
that frustrates me so much.
When it's demonstrable that they're duping the people, but prayer has such a religion has such a hold on the American audience that they allow them to do that because half of them believe that stuff.
Yeah, the church is like churches like that aspect is like the NRA because they have such a powerful lobby that it's you know even more powerful I believe than the NRA is. I'm sorry, go ahead, Ty.
I've heard like very. Well-established scientists refuse to call themselves atheists because as a name or as a group of people, they say atheists are very rude, but I don't believe in a God, but I'm not an atheist. But I'm like, maybe the reason why the outspoken people that you know who are atheists are so frustrated is because of this complete abuse of humanity that we see from religious leaders. And then maybe, yeah, like there are some people who are outspoken and upset about it and definitely frustrated. But I think that frustration is definitely vindicated by the fact that you have people out there basically selling snake oil or causing people to get rid of good medicine or selling prayer instead of like good medical research or inhibiting science. Like, all these stuff really makes me upset when I hear stuff like that.
Yeah.
I definitely agree that, you know, there's definitely angry atheists out there. There's really nice atheists and friendly atheists, too. I wouldn't overgeneralize. But if anything, that frustration that we do exhibit is completely, you know, justified when you look at what's going on in the world.
Yeah. Like Greta Christina says, you know, there are angry atheists out there, but they have every reason, every right to be angry. I mean, because of the way the religion is treating people in this world and in our country.
Anyway, well, it's not just atheists who are angry about faith healers. You know, I know several Christians who think that, you know, they're just scam artists and, you know, because every time they do, you know, faith healing is probably a whole other subject, but, you know, every time they start faith healing, they always start Heavenly Father. So that's a prayer. Okay, so what they're essentially what they're doing is they're praying away, and they'll say themselves, you know, well, it's not me that's doing it, it's God, but I've got to talk to him. You got to pay me so I can talk to him. And again, you don't have to pay me, but you know, you want me to go out and heal the world in my private jet. So, you know, that's the only way we keep this organization going is for you to contribute so I can keep on healing people.
Yeah. What do you do? The thing about prayer is that, like I said, it's about as effective as random chance. And preachers nowadays love telling you that, you know, God didn't answer your prayer. Sure, he did. He gave you one of three answers. He either answered your prayer by saying yes, no, or wait. In other words,
Yeah.
In other words, anything that happens, God's got it covered. There's a term for that, confirmation bias. In other words, if you pray for your uncle to get off the booze, but he doesn't, then it's just God saying wait. And if he goes to the hospital, it's saying, you know, God's saying, well, God's giving him a checkup, telling him, you know, he better stop what he's doing. So God is still good. God is still answering prayers. And then your uncle dies, and well, he's in a better place now. God knows best. There's absolutely, literally nothing God can do that the believer would say, well, that's wrong. That's bad. He didn't answer my prayer. It's always God knows best. God works in mysterious ways. Lean not on your own understanding. And it just drives me crazy the way every religious person gives God a pass on everything that happens.
Can I tweak it? There's confirmation bias there in that they throw out all the times where there's no wrong answer.
Uh-huh.
The interesting case in this situation is that there's never a wrong answer. All the answers are correct and support their God.
Right.
And the issue here is that their argument's not falsifiable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the real issue with it. If you have an unfalsifiable argument, you really have an argument where you're not really interested in knowing anything because you've already assumed the answer. And no matter what kind of consequence results, you're going to only support your one conclusion that you've had at the beginning. And so that's why it's important to know what it looks like if you're wrong. And
right. And
what you're highlighting is a really good example of why it's important to have a falsifiable belief.
Yeah. Another thing about prayer, it's almost like Jesus just wants to hear you beg. Because if your prayer, if what you're asking for isn't God's plan, then there's no need to pray for it because it's going to happen. If it's not in God's plan, then your prayer would be futile. There's no reason to ask for it because it's not in his plan. You know, but you could say, well, maybe just God wants to hear me beg. I don't know. But it makes no sense, but people don't seem to understand that. And now other people, I mean, we're talking about intercessory prayer, of course. Other people say, well, that's not the way I pray. I just pray to praise God. And, well, I don't have an answer for that. If it makes you feel better, do it. You're not really expecting anything. I have a problem with intercessory prayer, though, because a lot of people don't realize it, but
I'm sorry, Larry, what was that? You have a problem with what?
Intercessory prayer. In other words, you're asking God to intercede for you.
Gotcha.
And do something for you. Give you something, make an action happen, return your car keys, whatever.
Let me find my car keys!
Yeah, but the thing about it is, that is very close, if not the same thing, as witchcraft. You are, in this case, you are asking... I had it written down here. Yeah. You're using ritualized words to call upon a supernatural being to do your bidding in this world, and that is the, not, the kernel of witchcraft. It's white. You might call it white magic. But it's still witchcraft. You don't understand how this stuff can happen. I mean, you don't know how God would go about regrowing a limb or making your uncle come off the booze or whatever it is. You're requesting that he do it magically. And that is the same thing as what witches do when they ask the devil to do stuff for them, as it were. But people don't realize that that's what they're doing, but they are.
Larry, have you ever prayed?
Yeah, I used to be
life?
Christian. Yeah,
okay.
I was raised Christian.
Right. Were your prayers ever answered?
Well, that's just it. They were answered yes, no, or wait.
No, I'm saying, did you ever get a...
Well, did I ever lose my car keys and then pray for them?
No. Did you ever get an answer, I mean, a physical answer, say, God, I need your help with this. Will you help me with this? Sure, Larry, I'll get right on that.
I've got another. I wrote down a several quotes so you can tell. I had a toy phone when I was a child. It worked just like prayer. All the conversations were pretend, one-sided, and no one called.
Right.
So that's how it worked for me when I was a Christian.
Well, and I, you know, have, you know, several
that's
stories.
A good phone.
What's that? Ty, what's that?
I was just saying that's a really good phone. Good phone. Good phone.
Gotcha. One example that really stands out, and again, I think that I would have been benefited by saying, if I had not believed, well, I mean, let's just tell the story. But anyway, I went to Scouts, and I was at Scout camp. Well, they encouraged you to put a locker on your locker, put a lock on your locker.
A lock.
And I could not find, I mean, I was probably maybe 8, 9 years old, and I could not find my locker. And I thought, my gosh, everybody's going to take my stuff out, and they may not take it, but they're going to take it, and they're going to, you know, run it up the tree and do all sorts of stick it in the latrine,
yeah,
and all sorts of stuff. But I literally, and our Boy Scout troop was through, I think all of them are inherently, you know, they're all inherently religious based on their creed. But, you know, mine was, I joined in a Catholic school. So, I mean, I was, you know, it wasn't weird for anybody that I got down on my knees beside my cot and just begged God to help me find my locker. And I had to suffer for like, you know, 30 or 40 minutes saying, you know, thinking that, well, am I doing something wrong? I mean,
right,
this is a simple request.
Mm-hmm.
I know I had my locker here. Can't you just lead me to where it was? And it turns out I just went away and I came back and I turned something over that I hadn't turned over before. But I was literally suffering, you know, yeah, as a child because I could not find this locker to keep my stuff locked up. And if my parents had just told me, you know, well, there's nothing, I might just say, or somebody had, you know, a leader had come and said, well, what's the problem? I can't find my locker. Well, let me help you look for it. Or just, you know, or yeah, it'll or say, well, you know, you can't pray
yeah
for it. It'll just show up.
Well, there's an awful lot of guilt
right
associated with it. A lot of people, you know, they pray for a good one,
yeah,
their parent maybe to get
yeah
to get better, and they don't get better, and they feel
right
like they've done something
right
wrong. And there's so much guilt that you have to live with in a religious experience.
Yeah.
I'm at the bottom of the hour now, or we are, and I need to take a station identification break. We're going to play a song, but first of all, this is WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today's November 28th. It's about 7:30. And the song we have for you tonight is from Anthony David. It's called God Said, because that's what the preachers always say. Oh, I'm not saying it. God said it. I'm just repeating it. So here we go.
Christy, something happened a long time ago in Haiti, and people may not want to talk about it. They were under the heel of the French, and they got together and swore a pact to the devil. They said, we will serve you if you'll get us free from the French.
Mm.
True story. And so the devil said, okay, it's a deal. Ever since, they have been cursed.
Come shake the hand of my imaginary friend. See the trouble he gets in can't be traced back to me. Oh, he can pretend at the slightest of his whim.
He has the power to suspend all rules of morality. And when he gets angry, he can make the lightning strike. He can help me win the fight with his power. Yes, he speaks through me, and it's always positive, 'cause I can just ask for forgiveness and it's over. So you can't put the blame on me. I'm doing what God said. What God said. What God said. Don't you put the blame on me. I'm doing what God said. What God said. What God said.
So you're praying for the death of the President of the United States. Do you think it's appropriate to say something like that? Or
I'm not saying anything. What I'm doing is repeating what God is saying.
In the name of the one who made us all, I will hide behind these walls from my enemies. By the power bestowed from up above, I will conquer you because it is my destiny. And with the righteous hand, I will bring you to your knees. I will strip you of your freedom without mercy. And when the earth quakes and the blood runs in the sand, there will be no final stand for the unworthy. So you can't put the blame on me. I'm doing what God said. What God said. Don't you put the blame on me. I'm doing what God said. What God said. What God said. I stand on a mountaintop on a solid rock. I stand upon this truth and I won't be moved. I stand, and when I come to claim my victory, so you can't put the blame on me. I'm doing what God did. What God said. What God said. And he speaks to only me. I know what God said. What God said. What God
listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on Wozo 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Okay, and we're back. This is WZO Radio 103.9 LP FM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. This is a Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. We'll talk about the free thought groups now that you can join here in Knoxville. I'll go through them pretty quick as we have a couple of guests in the show with us. There's the Atheist Society of Knoxville. 16 years now and over 875 members. You can find them and join us at KnoxvilleAtheist.org. The Rationalists of East Tennessee have been around almost 25 years. RET has biweekly presentations at the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road, and you can find them by going to Rationalists.org. Check on upcoming events for more information about their activities. There's also the Sunday Assembly, which started in England just a couple of years ago and has spread around the world. It's a no-God church setting for those no longer believing in God, but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. Do a Google search for Sunday Assembly. Then there's the TV show we mentioned a little bit earlier. It's called Free Thought Forum. It's an atheist call-in TV show. It just now went off the air on Wednesday night because it's between 6:30 and 7:30. It's on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192. And you can watch it also streaming online at ctvnox.org. You can also find archive of some of their shows on YouTube, where a fan has been recording and posting them. Just go to YouTube and search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. And if you're interested in becoming involved with the TV or the radio show, just come to an ASK or RET meeting and talk to us about it. You could be our next co-host or guest. Remember, we have open lines. If you're willing to call in and join the conversation, call 865-333-5937. And getting back to the topic at hand, we were talking about, is prayer, does it do any good? Is it useless? Is it purposeless? Does it actually have any effect? If you'd like to talk to us about that, call 333-5937. But in the meantime, we got Wombat on the phone. Hello, Wombat.
Hey, I'm a Wombat.
And we have Eric here in the studio with us. Say hi, Eric.
Hi.
And you go ahead and take it away, if you'd like.
Oh, I don't know what.
Well, one thing that Dan Barker talks about prayer is, look at the posture of prayer. It is identical to the postures of captivity and slavery. Head bowed, on your knees, hands shackled at your wrist, body prostrated or eyes down or closed, voices lowered, all to be a submissive, non-threatening before a great master who demands to be feared, served, and adored. And that's pretty much the way it is, because you're a sheep. In a church, you're told what to do, and you better do it on pain of an eternal damnation. And it's just so much like slavery that it in some cases is slavery. If the preacher has to just ask you to do stuff for the church and you're not to pay you, you know, would you come mow the yard at the church? Would you come clean up the pews after the church? Whatever. And
give them 10%.
Yeah, and pay the preacher for the privilege of doing it. You were going to say something, Wombat?
Yeah, I have a weird question for you guys. So, my idea is, why would prayer ever work? You have to consider that you are, as an imperfect, you know, human bag of meat, basically talking to an all-powerful, all-knowing supernatural deity that knows how many molecules there are at every precise moment in the entire existence of the universe. Why would he change his plans because you needed someone to win a football game? Or, hey, maybe you didn't want your mom to be as your God made her to be.
Yeah.
Why are we assuming that prayer, why would we in this world assume that prayer would even work in the first place? Wouldn't that be incredibly arrogant of us to even imagine that possible?
Yeah. Christopher Hitchin puts it this way. The man who prays is the one who thinks that God has arranged matters all wrong, and who also thinks that he can instruct a perfect being on how to put them right, which is arrogant to the nth degree.
Well, I mean, I think as far as most Christians go anyway, I think they do kind of see God that way, as this all-powerful being that you're not worthy. And you know, here comes, this is the reason why we have Jesus. You know, Jesus is your buddy, you know, he's your friend, you know, he's the one, you know, you can't talk to God, you have to talk to Jesus. And then Jesus has to, you know, tell God that this is what, you know, I want you to do. And again, if it was like that, if it was just this massive powerful force or entity, I don't think you'd have the appeal of religion that you do. But because people get to talk to their buddy Jesus, I mean, he is your friend. He's the one who, you know, he died for you, and he's your buddy, and you can actually physically talk to him. But, you know, because if it was this huge, you know, massive entity, I don't think that religion would have the appeal. But Christianity, it brings it down to that level, is that, you know, hey, you've got a friend in Jesus.
Yeah.
Okay? He loves you, just like the song says.
I love that idea. The only cool thing is that I'm noticing that a lot of other religions have prayer that's exactly similar to Christianity. It's not even more ardent. Like, you would have Muslims praying five times a day. Jews who pray and don't pray to Jesus whatsoever, they still have prayer in Judaic as well as non-Judaic religions. And yet they still assume that their prayers have an effect on the reality because they're in communication with an all-powerful being.
Yeah, and if you don't think that, even for a little bit, do you think that maybe you don't have the power to talk to the Almighty? You've always got your priest or your preacher. He's kind of like an amplifier, you know, for your words, that you can talk to him and get him to ask on your behalf.
Yeah.
But which is a pretty good position to be if you want to take control of your sheep, to put yourself in as a go-between between the two.
All right, you can't have a
mom's Jehovah's Witness.
Go ahead.
No.
What were you saying?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was saying my mom's a Jehovah's Witness, and that is a faith that's very much structured in similar ties to, like, Mormon faith with regards to at least having elders and in your church. So, like, if there's issues that are going on within the congregation, you don't bring them up to, like, Jesus or leave the congregation. You bring them up to an elder. An elder will directly commune with higher elders and so on and so on. And you hope by the end of that chain, someone's talking directly to God and is now feedbacking that information down the list of the hegemony of elders back to the conflict that's going on within the layman members of the church. So that thing that Larry was talking about with, like, people diverting stuff to human authorities that they can see and touch and feel is very, very true in a lot of different kinds of religions as well.
Right.
And particularly if you've got a religion that holds confessions, you're taking, you know, everybody in the body of the church, pretty much, bringing their deepest, darkest secrets to the people who then have all that information to control them with. It's a lesson that was taken pretty well to heart by the Scientologists. When they started their church, they wanted to make that a part of their power, is to tell us what you've done wrong, tell us what thetans you have that are infesting your soul, and we'll be able to help you and to guide you to get rid of them. All in the meantime, they're recording all these conversations and putting them in a vault so they can hold that information against you.
I didn't know they did it, Larry.
Yeah, they did it.
Wow.
They call it removal of thetans, and they also call it there's a cleansing type of routine they go through, and they literally put you on a device that they tell you that will be able to tell if you're lying or not. So you're sitting there with a device and one in each hand, and telling your worst secrets, and basically looking at a dial that's telling you if you're lying or not. And they record those conversations.
Wow.
Anyway, just think about the power that a church or an organization who tells you that you have to bring them all of your darkest secrets and tell them about it so that they can forgive you for them or work with you on them.
Yeah, but that's not praying.
No, that's not.
It's not praying. It's the religion. It's the church wanting to do, like you said. They want to have, you know, they want you to come to them for absolution, you know, not just pray it away. I mean, you have to do this. Maybe that's maybe it's like when your parents make you go back in the, if you have to account to somebody physical, then you might more likely not to do it again. You know, like when your parents send you back in to pay for the candy you put in your pocket you didn't pay for.
Right.
Maybe that's the case.
Yeah. And that also brings up special dispensation. You pay the priest so that you can do a sin and not have to pay a price for it by eternal.
Is that still
damnation.
Going on?
You would know. I wouldn't.
I don't know about that. I don't know if that went out with the. But I've been a Catholic for it's been 30 years or more years. But they were talking about the this all powerful God. That's, again, you can't have it both ways. You can't say, well, my God's all powerful. He's all knowing. It's like God has a plan, and it clearly states that in the Bible. Well, maybe I don't know about clearly, if the Bible clearly states anything in the Bible, but, you know, it's like, God has a plan for you. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he's all powerful, and he knows what's going to happen before it even happens, and he's set this whole thing in motion. Okay. And you can't say, well, you know, God has control over my life, but then I can also pray to change things. It's just, you've got to, and again, that's just it. They don't have to pick one.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like you're making this up as you go.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know.
Yeah. True. And if he really is all-knowing, he knows everything you're going to ask for. He knows it well in advance of you asking. Right. He knows what you want. So why even bother going through the exercise?
And does that go against the third commandment? What does that go against the third commandment? Don't take the Lord's name in vain. Well, what's taking the Lord's name in vain? Okay, pointlessly talking about the Lord. Well, if you're constantly praying to the Lord and it's pointless, if you're trying to get it, not what you were saying earlier, but if you're trying to get him to change an action, isn't that taking the Lord's name in vain?
Yeah. One of the most egregious examples of taking the Lord's name in vain, I would think, would be a faith healing. You know, calling upon Jesus to heal people and they don't get healed, then you're using his name in vain, especially if you know they're not going to be healed up front. What were you going to say, Wombat?
I was saying, I think you said it best when you said Jesus loves hearing people beg. I think that should go on a t-shirt. That's such a great little thing to say.
It's not original to me.
But I
got it off the internet. Go ahead.
Okay. But I'm also wondering, doesn't he also get, wouldn't a God get tired of hearing people beg eventually? Like,
you
after, say, 2,000 years, wouldn't you get tired of, begging again, dang it, I'm just going to skip. I'm not listening anymore. And maybe we're living in a world where God just basically is sending everything to voicemail.
Yeah, yeah.
Like our Bruce Almighty, everything came in the... I don't know if you ever saw the movie Bruce Almighty with Jim Carrey.
I just haven't seen it.
Well, it's pretty funny. But anyway, all of his answers, all of his prayers came in voicemail, and he just answered yes to all. And the lottery was like $1.50 because everybody won it.
How can you have multiple winning numbers? They're different numbers. Maybe change all the numbers to the winning number.
Right.
No, why not?
Andrew, yes, we were talking about faith healing and prayers and these people who are praying to God to heal their children, but they had pneumonia and they were dying, and one of them actually died, and the authorities brought charges against them for neglecting the children, not giving them proper medical attention when they needed it. But there's another example of this that came up in the conversation, was that this one woman, she was she had some mental issues. She had postpartum depression and stuff. But she was also a very ardent Christian. She believed very much that her children were in danger of hellfire, that they, once they reached the age of reason, that they could very well make the wrong choices and end up in hell. And she loved them so much that she did not want to see that happen. So she took them one by one to the bathroom and drowned them in the bathtub. Her name was Andrea Yates. You can go look her up online there right now if you want to.
That happened in 2001.
And the thing about Christianity, all of this makes sense if you believe, if you buy into that, their dogma, that now that she's killed them, she could just go to her preacher or get down on her knees and pray for forgiveness and be with her children in heaven when she dies. So all of this falls under the auspices of Christian dogma. I mean, she believed it and she acted on it.
Consider a hero. This was a story in the Bible. I mean, you look at King Solomon, who was almost willing to chop a baby in half just because of a disagreement on who owned babies. There's a lot of situations where the validity of God and the devotion people have to that deity is more important than the humanity and empathy that we show to each other as people, particularly even to our own children.
Right.
And that's what's really depressing when you consider, when you have a religious point of view, how much that warps, your sense of humanity.
Well, it all falls into the fact that this life really doesn't mean anything except to prepare you for the next one, which is the real one, the one that you need to cram for. Matt Dillahunty calls it doormat. We wipe our feet in this lifetime so that we could go on to heaven in the next one.
What to say about the next life if everyone that's going there are willing to drown their kids or basically denounce gay people or say, hey, maybe slavery is okay if it's only talked about in this one part of the book that I consider the most important book, but I don't read about it.
Right.
And read all the other chapters and consider that way more important. Like, what kind of world are we setting ourselves up to if that's the afterlife people really want to go to?
Right. And all of this, it's just, it's strange to me because it's not like scientists have come around and said, you know, 3,000 years ago or 2,000 or even 500 years ago, the souls are real and we need to worry about where they go after we die. Science has never demonstrated that souls are real. Nobody has demonstrated that souls are real. As far as I know and as far as science knows, when you die, that's it. It's over, like any other plant or animal that's ever lived in this world. But if you talk to people, no, that can't be us. We've got to keep on living. But it's just dumb when there's no evidence for something like that to believe in something like that. And then have your soul be held hostage over your head like that by these organizations so that they can get you to do what they want you to do.
Right. They sell you the disease and then the cure at the same time.
Right. I've got a video on YouTube that the listener might want to look at. It's called The Hooks of Religious Belief. And it's only, I guess it's only like a minute and a half long. It's got music, no actual verbiage in it, except for what I put on the screen. And basically, is if you're raising your children with religious beliefs, a belief in a heaven, a belief in a hell, a belief in a soul, a belief in a God, a judgmental God, then you are putting religious hooks into your children that can later be used to manipulate that child by uncaring and nefarious preachers or adults. You don't want to do that. I mean, teach your children what's real. Teach the things that can be backed up in reality, not some supernatural dogma proposed by one particular religion. I mean, it just makes no sense.
But it does make sense to them because they've had it drilled into their, and they've never questioned anything.
We need to put a stop to it. This has been going on for years.
How do you do that, Larry?
Generation after generation.
How do you do that, Larry?
You study science, you study reality, you study philosophy. You
and
will have to
thinking.
Do some in critical thinking and street epistemology. You use a lot of tools
of
logic, tools of reason and rationality, and bank on the things you can prove or at least demonstrate to be real. If you can't, don't waste your time with that.
That's a good day.
Yeah.
One thing more I wanted to say before we got another
six minutes.
Here. Uh-huh. There's another quote that I like about Christopher Hitchens. He says we're half a chromosome away from being chimpanzees, and don't you think it shows?
Yeah.
I think that's being a little disrespectful of chimpanzees. I don't know if chimpanzees turn on each other. I don't know. I'm not aware of chimpanzees worshiping other than if you watch Planet of the Apes. The original, they had a worship, but another problem with prayer, and this is kind of, I mean, how I wanted to close it, the biggest concern that I have about prayer is that the whole idea of praying away our problems is completely delusional. People need to realize that there is not an all-powerful, invisible wizard that is going to do a thing for us.
Right.
We need to accept that all living creatures on this planet rely on each other for survival and that we must all work together and take action. Every single thinking and feeling creature's main goal in life is survival. And as I stated earlier, thoughts and prayers are not only meaningless, but counterproductive to actual actions.
Right.
We must all work together for this universal goal.
And there's a general label for that type of thought. It's called humanism. If you'd like, take a minute, go to Google and type in, what is humanism? It will really open your eyes. In one sentence, it's moving away from working toward getting approval from a deity to helping your fellow man. The goal of your actions is to help each other, not to glorify some deity somewhere.
Right.
But as an animal lover, I wish they would change that from humanist to earthlingist.
Earthlingist.
Because if you live here and if you live on this planet and you think and you feel, everybody should have the right to do that for as long as they can.
Mm-hmm. And that only holds until we get aliens. And then we have to extend the life.
I'm sorry, Larry. We do have aliens that have visited us. and they're living amongst us.
Oh, really? Okay.
I don't. By the way, I don't have any proof of that. I just, this is something I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, bring some evidence or what you, and we'll talk about it.
Oh, I don't know.
But anyway, no, I think that if it could happen once, and it happened here, you know, life arose on the planet Earth. If it happened once in this universe, so there's no reason to believe it couldn't happen somewhere else. I just think that the distances are so far that it would be hard to believe or hard to accept that we've been visited without evidence. Now show me evidence, and I will believe it. Because I know that there are ways of traveling faster than the speed of light. We're coming pretty darn close to working up an engine that will do that, but we have not made it yet. The theories are out there, but who's to say that other intelligences, other civilizations have not done it?
Right.
But my mind is open. I'm waiting for evidence.
And as Carl Sagan said, I believe he said this, if we're the only ones, that's an awful waste of space.
That was from Contact.
That's from
Contact. It was Carl Sagan that wrote
it. Yeah, he wrote the novel. I don't know if he included that one. It was in the movie, but if he included it in his book, in his novel as well. But yes, it sure would be a waste of space.
Yeah.
But right now, we don't have any proof. Yeah.
And if you're ever wondering how you could find out how likely it is that other civilizations exist out there in the universe, there's an equation for that. It's called the Drake Equation. Look up the Drake Equation on Google, and it'll tell you all about it. All you got to do is plug in some numbers, and at the end it'll tell you how many intelligent civilizations are probably extant in the universe. Last words. Got a couple minutes.
Well, is it more than one? More than one? What's the Drake Equation? More than one?
More than one civilization?
Yeah.
The Drake Equation may very well come up with millions.
Wow. Yeah, okay, that's my last word.
Yeah, put in some numbers and see what you get. Last words?
Thanks for having
me. Wow.
Wow. Okay, well, this is Doubter 5 saying, don't sweat hell. Everybody's going to some other version of hell. Everybody's going to some other religion's hell. And remember, it don't mean squat if souls aren't real, and I don't believe they are. So, Digital Free Thought Radio Hour, we're signing out. Say bye, everybody.
Bye.
Hi, everybody.
And we'll see you next Wednesday, I guess it is, on 7 o'clock. See if I can't find the outro.
Right.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Christmas, Larry.
We were.
Yes, we're going to have a Christmas show.
Well, tell them about it while I look this up.
Well, we're going to talk about, I'm going to try to do a three-part series over the next 3 weeks talking about Christmas. Next week is going to be how we got to the holiday we have today.
Very good.
And then,
I have a feeling it'll go through paganism somewhere in there.
I'm sure it will. If I do my homework.
Yep. And Wombat, I hope you'll join us for those. And everybody else too. So we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Listening to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.